Hi, Monk Podcast listeners. The following is a sample of the Monk Members Only Podcast. To access the full-length edition of this episode and all of our regular Monk Members Only Podcasts, go to our website, www.monkdebates.com, and register for membership. Membership is free, and it's available for you right now at www.monkdebates.com. Hope you enjoy the program. Hello, Monk members, and welcome to this, our regular Monk Members Only Podcast. This is our weekly program where we dive into the big issues and ideas in the news in the past 7 days, hopefully leaving you with some new analysis and insights on what happened, why it was important, and what we can learn from the last 7 days and current events. As our guide, we are always fortunate to have Janice Gross Stein, the founding director of the Monk School of Global Affairs, internationally acclaimed scholar and author, and again, all ours for the next 30 minutes. Janice, great to be talking with you on this Friday.
Great to be here, Rudyard, and great to be with all our friends, our Monk members.
Janice, one of the real privileges of having these conversations with you is that you've spent a kind of lifetime thinking and reflecting on the politics and power in the Middle East. For those of us, myself included, who have not been following maybe as much as we should, the ongoing conflict between Hamas and the State of Israel, what should we have taken away from the last 7 days since we last talked? And as of yesterday, a ceasefire agreement. To what extent is this a pivotal moment in this conflict? Give us your sense of what to take away from the last week for those of us, again, who have not been following every twist and turn in this drama.
You know, not surprising that you haven't, Rudyard, because we've seen this movie before. We've seen it over and over. And so let's abandon the idea of a pivotal moment. Okay. This conflict doesn't pivot. It's been going on for 150 years, and it will not end as a result of this ceasefire. What's really striking is how all politics are local. We can really understand this as a story of two elections, one in Palestine with the Palestinian Authority, one in Israel, where Netanyahu almost lost. The opposition that has been trying to get rid of him for over a decade was within sight. And then this conflict blows up. That is gone. There is now talk about a national unity government, and he will continue to be the prime minister, despite the fact that he faces an ongoing criminal trial. Hamas, they have not used rocket fire to achieve their objectives for 7 years. But wow, just before those Palestinian elections were scheduled, they made a decision to return to a more active form of warfare. Out of this, Abbas sideline, no elections. Hamas, with the high profile now, the defender of Palestinians, the defender of Jerusalem. But, and here's the big but, one more time of devastated infrastructure, which is what has reduced Gazan support for Hamas over the years. Who's the winner here, Rudyard? Really, one person for sure. Netanyahu stays in office. And that's why he's called the master politician. Somehow he rises from the ashes over and over and over again.
What do you think of this analysis that Hamas is also a big winner here? And it's not simply that they have pushed Fatah and Mahmoud Abbas to the kind of periphery of Palestinian politics, seizing, in a sense, control politically of the Palestinian movement, not just in Gaza and the West Bank, but Lebanon, Egypt, and elsewhere. They are now again, we'll see if there's elections or not, but they are the de facto leaders of the Palestinian cause. And more importantly, some analysts saying their real victory is the extent to which they were able to sow the seeds of intercommunal violence in Israel in a way that wasn't evident in the last eruption. What was that, seven, 8 years 2000, ago?
14. 2014. Yeah.
So Hamas has achieved something important here. It has divided Israeli society. It has surfaced in Israeli society these fault lines, these fractures that many say are the result of Netanyahu, frankly, just staying too long, of creating a situation in Israel, as you characterized, albeit slightly tongue-in-cheek last week, of a kind of failed state, a state that's incapable of having elections to express a political consensus in a country and move on with policies that reflect this consensus. So what do you think of that analysis, that Hamas here has really left the table with some important new stakes that they can potentially play, as you say, in the next round of this never-ending conflict?
Certainly, if you look at where everybody is right after the ceasefire, Hamas looks like it's made some big gains. But here's the story, Roger. Hamas lives or dies by whether Gazans support them, ultimately. You look at those pictures of the destroyed infrastructure in Gaza. So whatever political benefit Hamas gets short term, if they cannot address, this is about delivering the goods, as we've talked about it. Mm-hmm. Can government meet the expectations of people? And there is a sense of huge frustration among Gazans, which partly explains why Hamas did this. So here's an area where it may break through, but let's see. The Biden administration, who had no policy on this conflict at all, wanted it to go away. But as the aphorism goes, it doesn't matter whether you pay attention to Israel-Palestine or not. Israel-Palestine will come and get you. And that's exactly what happened to this administration. It's had every president since, frankly, the 60s. So Biden is now about, the rumors have it, about to go in with massive spending in Gaza to rebuild the infrastructure. That's the plan. Now, let's see the execution. What agencies is that money going to go to? Is it, mm-hmm. It can't go to Hamas directly. UN agencies in the area, frankly, have a not very good record of managing that money. And if that's the plan and it fails yet one more time, as it has repeatedly, the gains that Hamas has made are not going to be longstanding. Frankly.
Well, you know, America's success at reconstruction in Iraq and Afghanistan really is stellar. So I'm not holding my breath here for their ability. Also, their ability politically to sustain support for Gaza in a meaningful way.
You know, Rudyard, one more point we're talking about that kind of escaped attention. Egypt has been, surpassed by glitzy Emiratis and reawakening and modernizing Saudis, mesmerizing everybody. Once the fighting actually broke out, Egypt was the only government that had connections to Hamas and to the Israeli government. This ceasefire is an Egyptian product, frankly. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, Biden weighed in on the telephone, but the heavy lift on this was the government of Egypt. Egypt never goes away. It never. Mm-hmm. It's one of the old societies that you and I have been talking about, mm-hmm. whose history goes back 5,000 years. They have a sense of the long game, the Egyptians. When you talk to them, they tell you, we'll be here in 3,000 years. Will you?
Right. So, Janice, final question on this before we move on. Does the ceasefire hold? Is this, in a sense, the new kind of de facto phase of this conflict?
Yeah, this ceasefire does hold. Hamas has been asking for a ceasefire for 5 or 6 days. Netanyahu held off for political gain, so they have no reason to disrupt it. Netanyahu has got what he wants. So we are back to, how do we break this cycle? So 5 years or 6 years from now, you and I are not sitting here with monk members talking about one more explosion. It's not an easy question, and it sure has no easy answers.
You've been listening to a sample of the Monk Members Only podcast. To access the rest of the episode, consider becoming a member. Membership is free and available at www.monkdebates.com. Once you've joined as a member, go to your membership profile to access the rest of this episode and all of our Monk Members podcasts. Thanks for listening.